You found my Hulu.
Get these
what's
kids
Hulu?
Off my lawn. Huzzah. Welcome to a new episode of Stuck at Home with me, Cliff Dorfman, and this guy.
I'm a Dogecoin millionaire. Not really, but I...
Jason Smith.
So...
What's going on? What do you mean? Well, here, you buy Dogecoin normally, or something?
So here's the deal. Normally we are the show. We're just a couple people. We're just a couple dudes hanging out who love movies, who love TV.
Yep.
Content. Love shows and want to share those shows with you.
Yes. And we will tell you all about the streaming wars, what to stream and where to stream it. Though, what's going on with Dogecoin? Because normally you'd ask me what I'm watching, but I'm interested.
So, I'm a sucker for anything on the internet. You know that, right? Like, if I those things, like the wrist thing. Do you remember when I tried to wear the wrist thing that made me cooler and hotter by just wearing the little wrist thing, and I thought I could make me, like, lower my body temperature? Remember that?
How many times did you get, give your money to the prince?
Oh, I never gave my money to the prince. I did almost give some money to one of those things where it's like, hey, I want to be your roommate, but I'm from overseas. And I'm going to send you some traveler's checks. Oh, here. You know what? I'm not going to be able to leave anymore. I'm not going to be able to move anymore. So can you just send me that money back? Well, I already deposited the traveler's checks. Just send me cash. That's fine. Almost fell for that one.
Now, you know what I fall for? The girl goes, just can you send me some gas money before I get there? All of a sudden she's gone. I'm like, what? Didn't you need $100 for gas? All right, so tell me about Dogecoin.
Okay, so
Dogecoin. I want to hear about what the hell happened.
So, I fall for a lot of stuff. Last summer, when we were getting into TikTok, when we were becoming TikTok masters, remember you remember that period of time when we were becoming TikTok masters? Well, when the process of becoming TikTok masters, there was this thing on TikTok that's like, buy Dogecoin. We're gonna bring it up to $1. And so I bought $500 of it because TikTok told me to, and I thought, well, what the heck? Not smart.
What did you use? Kraken?
No, I used Robinhood.
Oh boy.
Right. So yeah. So we'll get into that later. But I used Robinhood. I bought $500 worth of it. I promptly watched it go from 500 to 400, like within the next couple days, and then go to 300. Now, I'm a gambling man. I'm from Reno. I'm a casino guy. I know, like, at a certain point, like, the money, you know, if I'm not the value of it there, I might as well leave it there, because at 200, I'm not taking it out.
No.
Already lost it, as far as I'm concerned, right? Yeah. Like, that $500 I invested was lost. I was fine with it.
But you're so like, let me buy it low.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So now it's at 200, I'll buy 500 more. Hey, yeah, Nancy.
It's like, I'm going all in. I don't mess around. Hi, Nancy.
What happened?
So I bought it. I left it there, and it just sat there. And the $500 I bought was between $200 and maybe $350, but never anywhere else. I figure I'll just leave it there. Maybe it'll go away. Maybe it'll go bigger. So I was listening to Elon Musk last night on Clubhouse. He was doing a big talk about everything, and he mentioned how he got kind of caught up in this whole, like, mentioning Dogecoin on something and not being wanting to mess with the money. But
why,
like,
do you keep calling it Doge?
Doge, because it's Dogecoin. It's not
Doge?
No, it's not Dogecoin. It's Doge.
How
it's
the hell
a
are you supposed
dog.
To know that? How the hell are you supposed
Dogecoin.
To know that?
Dogecoin. Because memes, dog. I mean, Doge.
Go on.
Doggo. Memes, just doggo. On.
Just please continue.
Sorry. I still dad jokes. So anyway, so I get there, I do this thing, and he's talking about Dogecoin. I had a big talk on Stereo yesterday. Really good talk on crypto concern, the whole thing going on with GameStop and all that stuff. So I've been on there really talking about that and just trying to figure it out. I don't understand it all the way either, but I was like, well, and before that talk, I didn't even think I'd open my Robinhood. So I opened my Robinhood after hearing Elon Musk talk about it. It's like, oh, I wonder how, maybe I got my money back. So I look in there, my $500, $5,500.
I was not expecting that as an ending.
No.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah. $5,500.
Did you sell it?
I'm doing my thing right now. So I went back on Stereo last night because I was like, I don't know what the fuck to do with this. I don't know anything about this. I was going to text you. I was like, if there's one person who knows less about crypto than me, it's the guy who I have to help set up his Netflix.
Right. And you know what I was doing? Sleeping when you text that. I was fast asleep. I fell asleep at 8 o'clock last night. Please continue.
But yeah, so I went on, I did another big long talk and I was just like, what do I do with this? And so they're telling me to hold, and I can do that because like I said, like at this point, that's all casino money. I'm looking at it right now, like I'm just a big runner. So I'm going to try and hold on to it for another few days to see what happens, but it dropped by $500 and I'm kind of mad about it. But at the same time, Scott Porter like borrowed $5,000, but at the same time, I kind of wanted to see what happens because what do you know? I have 162,000 Dogecoins. So, we'll see what happens, but I'm going to hold it till Thursday. If it's above 5,000, I'm going to take $5,000, however much that's worth. And I'm going to give it away, to people that need it. I promised to hold for them. So I'm going to donate it.
You're going to donate it? You're so nice.
Yeah, I'm going to give it away. But not all of it. Like, if it goes to 100,000 tonight, like, by Thursday...
You're not
like,
giving it away.
No. The next five grand of it. Like, the next doubling of it. I'm going to give away that 5,000. All because, you know, because the Stereo people were nice. They helped me out. They hooked
this
me up.
This is what I love about Stereo. I mean, we should get into talking a little more about Stereo. But I want to talk about it because, you know, I'm addicted to it. You know, we do our Friday shows there. I love interacting with our fans and also the whole community in Stereo.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I am very excited about our guest today.
I am too.
I am very excited. First of all, he's got his new comedy special coming out on They Ready. It's season two. Tiffany Haddish's They Ready on Netflix, which comes out tonight.
It's pronounced They Ready.
Is that how it's pronounced? I didn't feel confident enough to do that.
It's all right. I just want to let you know.
Thank you.
Dogecoin and They Ready.
Let me tell you something. This guy was born ready. It feels like it should be his special and Tiffany Haddish should be on it. He's been on SNL. He's been on The Sopranos. He was in Shrekless. He did the voice of Eddie Murphy.
Kind of shit in Celebrity Deathmatch.
Oh, like, yeah. What is it? Robotron or something?
No.
He does it's like Robotron. I have to ask him when he gets on. And also, equally as important, I have to say, he is a veteran. So thank you for your service. And I want to bring him on right now. Ladies and gentlemen, the infamous, hysterical Dean Edwards. Yes.
They ready.
They ready. And by the way,
that was classic. He did it perfectly. I'm showing Tiffany that. And I'm gonna make it into a GIF.
Jason, you just became a GIF. I love that, man. Oh, I'm red. And for real though, thank you for your service. Very much.
Oh,
so.
Thanks, bro. Thank you.
6 years in the army, right?
Yeah, man. Yeah, 6 years. It's funny because I gave something. I had to do my top five for eight. You know, we're promotional machines, and so I'm going everywhere, making sure people watch They Ready season two on Netflix.
They Ready.
And I did my top five for AV Club, top five nerdiest things in my home, and number two was look, I'm almost tempted to hold up.
Please.
I'm grabbing this. Since you brought up my service, hold up.
This is
ready?
Fantastic. Dean's going to first.
Bam!
Oh, look at that look at picture that. Look next to the American flag and your dress greens.
My nerdy.
You are handsome, man.
I love it.
This is funny because you know fantastic. Everybody else when you're in basic and you're in boot camp and you take your picture and your dress greens, everyone looks serious.
You got this big ass smile on. You're like, I tell jokes for a living.
I'm flipping the game, man. Y'all ain't
getting as soon as I get out of here.
Seriously? Or, you know.
Well, did you go to Fort Bragg? Is that what you did?
No, I was Fort Jackson, South Carolina, Columbia, South Carolina.
I was what was called ENED. You know what that is?
No.
Eligible but not enlisted. I went through the whole physical at Fort Hamilton in Brooklyn. 6 hours, you know.
Yeah.
Did you do Fort Hamilton for your physical?
No, man. I was upstate. What I joined. I was in college up in Rochester, and so I had to do it in physical and everything up in Buffalo. Had to go to Buffalo.
So it's even
colder. Yeah, dude. It was fortunately it was summertime. It was summertime.
Oh, you got lucky.
But yeah, I remember that whole thing. I remember because we went out to a club the night before and they were like, you can't, yo, whatever you do, don't mess around with any women. I was like, why not? They said, because if they find semen in your urine, you're done. I was like, is that really a bad thing?
I know. I don't get it. Where's the rub? What's the fucking problem? Sorry.
I was like, yeah, I'm fine.
Okay. Oh, I knew this was going to be fun. Okay. So, Dean, if you don't mind, I want to jump like way back for a sec, right?
Yeah, man.
You've been doing this. You know, you were a comedy veteran as well. So,
Yeah, man.
You were born in the Bronx, correct?
Born in the BX, South Bronx, Bronx stand up. Born in the Bronx, raised in the Bronx in Mount Vernon, New York. And we moved a bunch of times. My dad worked for New York State Department of Corrections. So every time he got promoted, we moved. You know, back in the days, success meant moving further and further upstate. And so
away from.
Yeah. So away from those people in the city. Yeah. And so we started in New York, wound up in Westchester, Yorktown Heights for a couple of years, and then Poughkeepsie for a year. Wow. And then we wound up in a place called Batavia, New York. Batavia is Greek for three black people. And that was my third high school because my dad got transferred to Attica.
Oh, because it sounds like I was going to ask work, you if he was near. Yeah, no, I know what you meant. I was going to ask you, like, it was that's not up by Elmira, though, right?
Past Elmira. Elmira is more is closer to central New York. So Batavia is actually the midway point between Rochester and Buffalo. So it's they call that Western New York, which I didn't know until I lived up there. Because most New York is past Yonkers is upstate. Right. You know,
right.
Past,
for sure.
You know,
I was like, past West Scarsdale is upstate.
Yeah.
Like, if you're past Scarsdale, you're upstate.
Yeah. You have trees and sidewalks. Right. Okay. And I learned recently, my mother said, because I said, why do we move upstate? And she said, my Nana said, you know what? Because they were here during the whole nuclear fear. Right. So they said, you know what? When you're successful, people either moved out to Long Island like your family or moved upstate. And she said the reason we moved upstate is because it's still part of the country. They said if you live in Long Island and anything goes down, you got to go through Long Island and the city to get to the rest of the country. So
it's no joke. You
yeah,
really
so
do.
We were planning ahead. Yeah.
Really, that's they got the scare in them good. Holy crap.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So,
oh, yeah.
So you end up moving all the way up north. So I want to know how you make your way back down to the city to start your stand-up career. Like, how does this happen for you?
Yeah, I actually started 2 weeks before Def Comedy Jam premiered, February 21st, 1992. So I'm coming up on 29 years later this month from the first time on stage. And I was doing it for a couple of years. I'm in college and my dad, he actually, you know, leave it to your father to leg swoop your ego, right? He says, he's like, hey, what are you doing with this comedy thing? I'm like, I'm a comedian. He was like, what was your last show? I said, oh man, I had a show 2 weeks ago. I hosted a thing at a church and next week I'm hosting a fashion show. And she was like, you ain't no comedian. You're a reservist. You're like, it's like the military.
You're out of the army, right? You're out of the army.
I'm still in, but I'm reservist now, right?
Okay, so, you're finishing out. Got you.
Yeah. So then he checked my ego and he was like, if you really want to do this, you gotta go back to the city, which my mother wasn't happy to hear because now I gotta go back to the South Bronx, is what I did. And so
Really?
I moved
That's
back
where
and,
you went. You went back
yeah,
to
I
South
went back,
Bronx.
I went back to the South Bronx, stayed with some close friends, and been in Brooklyn since 95, man. I've been and just hitting the pavement. And I moved back to the Bronx in June 1995, and I was on TV in Def Comedy Jam in November. So that right there was all the evidence that I needed.
Six months.
It was 6 months. Yeah.
Yeah,
I love that you
math.
Like, one month.
My fingers. Yeah. Holy shit. 6 months. So wait, let me ask you this. What was your first club? You know, like when you got into the city, where's the first place you went and where was the first place you killed?
First club that I probably went to actually Uptown Comedy Club. Uptown Comedy Club up in Harlem. Mm-hmm. They used to do what's called like a fast break, where if you were new, what we call the new jack, they would have like all the established acts come and perform, and then they had fast break comedy where you had 3 minutes to go on, hit him hard, hit him in the head, and get out of there. And that's what I did. And so 3 minutes, I was like, "Here's my Michael Jackson," and like I don't even remember. And Boyz II Men, and it was quick.
Yeah, but did you kill it?
Or
did
I killed it. I killed it. And it was funny because back then, if they liked you, Uptown, they stomped, they clapped, but then they stomped. So you felt the literal energy of people applauding you with their feet.
That's really kind of cool, actually. Yeah. That's a lot of energy to intake.
Yeah, like, man. Yeah.
And so at that point, you know you're in, right? Like, you're addicted to this. You're like, I'm not stopping.
Oh, from the first time I was on stage. I'm still chasing the high from the first time I was on stage, you know? And even, you know, when I, like, doing any TV show always is sort of invigorating, but shooting my first special with Netflix and Tiffany Haddish for They Ready season 2, that was as close as I could get to the feeling of my first time getting on stage.
Wait till the next one, which is just your special. That's gonna be next.
I locked and loaded. I'm ready.
Right, just give me a camera, give me a distributor, you're good to go, right? Did you have a mentor? Did you have any mentors coming up that were comedians?
I came up, you know, my generation of comics that I came up with, everyone from rest in peace to Todd Lynn, rest in peace Patrice O'Neill, good friends of mine. You know, I was talking to Billy Burr earlier. I've known Billy long enough that I still call him Billy instead of Bill. I refuse to allow him to think he's matured.
Well, he hasn't, has he?
You know, I know, right? I do what I gotta do. And we keep it moving.
Thanks, Bobo, for stopping by. Go on.
Yeah, of course. You know, Dean asked me to, so I'm going
to. I met him one time with Saget. I was with Saget at Soho House. He's like, this is Bill Burr. He's like, yeah, hey, how you doing? I was like, okay, girl, I'm good. I'm good. Bye.
Right. That's enough.
Smoking cigar. That's bye.
Enough. Yeah.
Oh, I'm thrilled. Go on.
But mentors, you know, people that have given me some, like, positive feedback and insight coming up. Colin Quinn, Chris Rock, and even Sandler. Like, when I was on SNL my first season, because I'm a stand-up, I didn't come from the sketch world, and whereas a lot of the cast members that had come from sketch knew someone, you know. So Maya Rudolph, when she started there, she might have known Will Ferrell, because Will, you know, Will was Groundling. She was Groundling.
Right. Right.
But I knew stand-up. So Chris offered me, you know, positive feedback and insight whenever I'd run into him at, like, the Comedy Cellar. Colin was very helpful because he had done Weekend Update and was the you know, the host of Weekend Update or the anchor. Mm-hmm. And so I would lean on him and ask him questions a lot. And even Sandler, you know, they were all encouraging. Having guys that came through the same circuit I came through did wonders for my confidence.
Yeah, because that's great that you brought it up, because that was my next go-to was SNL, right? Because this is a big land, right? And how does this, because you're not, like you said, you're not sketch comedy, you're not Groundlings, you're SNL.
Right, no,
so,
no.
So what is your entree into SNL, and how does your audition go, and what is that like? Can you just explain? Because that's a big moment, right?
Yeah. I anyone that's seen me say this, I tell the story often in interviews because it's such an exciting story. I had auditioned for a sketch show. Remember the now defunct UPN network, right?
Of course. You know what Spike Lee called it. I can't. But you know what he called it in Bamboozled, don't you?
Yeah.
That's the only reason I remember that network. Right. It's because of Bamboozled. All
right,
go on.
Right. So UPN, they actually flew me to LA to audition for a sketch show, and I was awful. I bombed. It was embarrassing because when I got back, my manager said, "Yeah, you got to do better." They didn't. I was like, "All right, man,
you got to do better.
You got to do better." So instead of you know, taking offense or getting angry, I just licked my wounds and said, "Okay, I have to learn that world." And so Second City had some classes they were doing in New York. I did a class for about 3 or 4 months, and then fast forward to June 2001, Mad TV was having auditions, and I had gotten the chance to see Jimmy Fallon and a couple of other people's audition tapes for SNL. And I noticed that, you know, with most sketch shows, they do three characters and three impressions in 3 minutes. It's all the threes. And so in my mind, I said, you know what, my strong suit is the impressions. So I said, you know what, let me focus on the impressions and see what I can come up with, put together for the characters. And I'm going to do more than three impressions, because if I do more in the allotted time, they're not going to say, no, that's too many. You know? So I wrote a scene and I said, this is my impression of a Black award show that Chris Rock and Chris Tucker are hosting, and Jay-Z and Erykah Badu are doing a musical duet. And then Denzel Washington and Sam Jackson are presenting James Earl Jones with Lifetime Achievement Award. Boom, go. And now I've said it, so now I can just go run through it and bounce from. I can go from Denzel Washington to Chris Rock and Chris Tucker and just bounce back and James Earl Jones and bounce between all of them. And so I crushed the Mad TV audition, so much so that instead of 3 minutes, she kept throwing. She's like, who else can you do? I was like, I don't know. She's like, Jamie Foxx. I was like, well, you know, if you need me to do Jamie Foxx, you know, he's kind of cool. And, you know, we're going to Jamie. She's like, Steve Harvey. I was like, well, I could do Steve Harvey, but, you know, I've never tried to do. But I was just basing it all off of whatever I had seen, you know, in on television.
Thank you.
You know, so it crushes. As I leave the audition, my manager calls, says they want you to come back tomorrow for producers. I'm feeling great. I had a stand-up showcase that night, had a great set, did the call back. It went well. 2 weeks later, I'm on the set of a commercial for KFC, a Black man doing chicken. Oh, no. This commercial. And my agent calls and he says, we have good news and better news. The good news is Mad TV, they don't even want to screen test you. They're offering you 6 episodes that are rolled to 13. I was like, this is awesome. I said, well, if that's good news, what's the better news? He said, the better news is the people from SNL were in the audience at that showcase you did that night. So that I just had a summer full of heat. And because it had worked so well with Mad TV, by the time I did a screen test for SNL and I was on home base in Studio 8H, I knew my stuff was crisp. I found out less than a week later that I had booked it and then flew to Montreal just for last. So it was an amazing summer, really, you know. And then my buddy Ian Edwards told me, he was like, man, that's how you're supposed to go to Montreal with a job already.
I mean, this is fantastic. And here's the thing, though. And what I'm bringing up is this road that you've had to this amazing new special that's coming out tonight.
Tonight,
6 hours.
They ready.
Okay.
Yeah, they ready.
Okay. It's okay. Thank
Jason,
you.
Jason, he did well.
Thank you very much.
You ready, Cliff?
Thank you, Jason. So,
you know, anytime he pops in, it feels like those old episodes are laughing. You just see a face.
I think I'm Goldie Hawn. Just popping in. It's my Goldie. So, but why I'm bringing this up, right? Because this is, you know, you're now on SNL and eventually you end up leaving SNL. I got to ask you a question, because every time I cite creative differences, it just means I hated everybody. I mean, when I leave a place, I'm like, creative differences, I can stand any of you. But I, you're so nice, I don't feel like that's the case. Do you mind me asking, like, what you mean by that? Yeah, I'm dying to know, as a fan.
Honestly speaking, it was just a matter of they didn't invite me back for season number 3, and I'm like, all right, well, I guess that ran its course. Thanks for the 41 episodes. And, I still got love for everybody over there, because, you know, it's still people still, you know, years later, still ask about it. I think because, I mean, think about the show's been on there for 46 years. Mm-hmm. There have only been about 150 cast members. There have only been about 20 Black people, 19 and a half if you split Maya Rudolph. And, you know, so I'm in good company. I'm not complaining. I know there are people that have complained about their time, but I don't come from a position of some sort of, you know, opportunity or privilege where I'm like, how dare they not show me the proper. Yeah, I wanted to get more love and get more shine, but you know, I'm on Netflix now, baby. I got
well,
no.
Well, this is
no
my word. Point. It's why I bring it up, because careers are so cyclical. They're so volatile at times.
Yeah.
And you know, you go into Toronto, you got the shows. You know, it's like you're going with a job, and then it ends after 41 episodes, which is no joke. And then right, and it's like here we are. Thank God, sitting here, how many years later, and now you have this special coming on Netflix, which is like the biggest thing with one of the biggest people, except for yourself. And how does this come about now? Tell me about this, because I'm very
excited. This was, you know what? His was funny. I actually, in December 2019, I actually made a recording of myself. It's on my Instagram, at @IamDeanEdwards. I put it up a week ago. I had an epiphany, and I recorded myself. I said, I'm putting it down on December 11th. I will be recording. I will be shooting a comedy special for Netflix in 2020. And then I forgot about it.
You got nothing. You didn't have
nothing lined up. I just manifested. I just breathed it into existence. And then Tiffany called me in August. Called me in August and said, "We're doing season two, and we want you to be a part of it." And I was like, "This is awesome." You know, and then just was ready to prepare. And so I just the clubs were great because I was able to, you know, from having a reputation and rapport with so many comedy clubs in the nation, I was able to have my agents reach out and say, "Listen, he's shooting something in October and we need about 4 weeks of work." So I just every weekend, socially distanced, masked up, I was doing shows all over from Minneapolis to Indianapolis. And then we, when it was time to go out to shoot it on the West Coast out in Long Beach, we went and knocked it out, man. And it was just crisp. You know, kudos to Tiffany and Paige Hurwitz and Wanda Sykes at Push It Productions, because they did an amazing job at making it feel like COVID wasn't even occurring.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. Wanda Sykes involved too, huh? I mean, this is all powerhouse.
Yeah, man. Like I said, I'm in great company and I appreciate Tiffany for reaching back. You know, she didn't have to. She reached back. And I've known Tiffany for damn near two decades, man. Wow. When I started going out to LA, we just formed a friendship from seeing each other in the club. She's always been someone that was a pleasure to meet and vibe off. She knows my family your wife always co-signs, and my wife always like, she's so full of energy, you know? For her just to reach back, not just for like myself, but Tony Woods, who did an amazing job, Barbara Carlisle, who's been doing this 44 years, and you know, and it was is living in Georgia, so you know, she wasn't necessarily on Hollywood's radar, but she is now.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, right? It's like, it's funny because you guys are all veterans, and yet it's like, get ready, and it's like, kind of ironic, isn't it?
Right. Yeah, initially we were like, are they going to call it they've been ready?
Yeah, for a long-ass time.
Right,
But still, it is bringing you so much more thrusted into this spotlight.
Yeah.
So with COVID and everything happening and the vaccines rolling out or whatever, but normally you get something this big and you're on the road, like you're gone.
Right.
So what do you do now? Like, how have you been coping with, you know, limited road trips or what have you?
Right. You know what? For the most part, I mean, everything currently is on online, social media. And so, you know, I've been maximizing Instagram. I do a Monday Night Live podcast where I've had everyone from Tiffany Haddish to Jim Gaffigan and Sebastian Maniscalco on. Every Monday at 11 p.m. Eastern, I do something on at I Am Dean Edwards. It initially started as something that I did just to get out of the monotony of just sitting in the house. But it also turned into something where every performer I know, because we've had different, like tonight I have a poet on, just hear more, I have a poet on. We all have these different journeys towards our different levels of success. And so I like sharing that with the world and giving insight to you know, up and coming artists that might not know some of the things that we already know.
Who are your favorite comedians?
My favorite comedians, aside from myself, you know, because I love some meat. but my favorites, obviously, I mentioned Patrice, rest in peace, Patrice O'Neal and Todd Lynn, who I shout out at the end of my set. Dave Chappelle, man, is Dave is transcended, and he's just on a different planet. Chappelle, Sebastian, I love Gaffigan. Is a really funny comic, no blood relation, but we've known each other for years, good friend. Ian Edwards is a great comic. Billy Burr is an amazing comic. Shoot, Tiffany is an amazing comedically. Wanda Sykes. Paul Verzi. I just did his podcast earlier today, and Verzi is an amazing comic. Like, there's so many comics that people aren't aware of.
What I'm talking about. It's these great people out there that only comedians know, and then people who regular the clubs.
Right. Judah Friedlander, Ted Alexander. Yeah, just amazingly talented comics that, because the world is different than you and I were coming up, whereas if you popped on TV, everyone knew you, but there's so many outlets now that it's harder to sort of narrow down who you love. But when you find it, you stumble onto something special, which is why I love Netflix, because, you know, there's something for everybody on Netflix, you know, and again, taking it back to what I love about this season of They Ready is we all have such distinctive comedic styles and comedic voices, you know, and so what I'm doing is so drastically different from what Kim Clark and Aaron Jackson is doing, and what Aaron's doing is different from what Godfrey is doing, you know, so it's awesome to have so much flavor under one umbrella, all with different, it's like we form Voltron, right? But we all have like such amazing skill set.
Oh, we all the head.
Jason was coming up.
Oh,
with
we
Voltron.
All the head. We
form right.
Wu Tang.
Right.
If they fall out, he the head. Yeah, that's right.
Right. And I'll form the head.
Oh my God. Okay, so we got this special coming out tonight because Jason's here, so I know that means I got to let you go. So we kind of look at him. He's like, "Yeah, that's right."
did y'all enjoy it? Y'all watched it or y'all?
Are you kidding me?
So funny. Thank you.
I don't want to say any of the jokes because I don't want to give anything away.
Right.
I was going to quote an older joke of yours about Jay-Z and where rap is right now, but I'm not.
Yeah. Rap is changed since I ain't doing an impression of him on the show. I can do him here.
Yes.
Rap is definitely, you know, we came from, listen, when we were coming up, rappers had bass in the Prince. How low can you go? And now they're, leave me alone. Rappers are getting bullied now.
I'm waiting for that because I feel like that really started with Wayne.
I still laugh. Oh my God. Yeah, I love this show. I can't wait to watch it again. I can't wait to watch it with my kid. I can't recommend it highly enough. Tonight, they're ready. Wait, Jason.
They ready.
Tiffany Haddish, Dean Edwards, Netflix. What you got? What are you going to say?
And I was going to say I'm very proud of the fact, like, I don't make a big deal about not using profanity, but I'm proud of the fact that people actually can watch my special and you can, and your whole family, there's something for the whole family and everybody's going to laugh, whether you're your grandmother or yourself or your children, everybody can vibe out and enjoy it. And I'm really proud of this, the first of many comedy specials with Netflix. See, I'm manifesting that too.
You know, we're going to have you back by the end of next year and it's going to be your special.
Yeah,
it's going to be your hour special. I cannot wait.
I'm looking forward to it, man. So, thank
Dean
you,
Edwards,
Jason.
Thank you so much, Dean Edwards.
Thanks,
thank
fellas.
You, thank you, thank you.
Appreciate
you. Yeah.
Dean
Edwards.
Oh, it's so exciting. They ready? Just as a reminder before everybody, I know we let Dean go already, but it's available February 2nd, but that's midnight tonight. Right. And so it'll be available for everybody. Very exciting. It's really good, guys. She did the first season was great specials. This one's better. It's better. And I'm
it is better. I agree. There's something about the energy on this one that I didn't know they shot it on Long Beach, but there's something about the energy on this one that is it's infectious. Mm-hmm. It really is. And I was going to ask him, if you didn't pop your head in there, about why he decided to work clean, because that is one of the great things. He doesn't curse, you know, unless he's doing his...
Do you want to ask him? He's still here. He hasn't left. Why?
What? Yeah, I'm here. I heard. Yeah.
Why did you just like, what's the, it's a big decision.
Yeah. You know what? I saw when I was, when I first started, man, like I said, Def Comedy Jam premiered right after I started, and watching, you know, so many amazing comics on the show, I also realized that the landscape of what people were going to expect from a Black comic was changing drastically. And so I was like, I want to stand out. And then I also happened to see Sinbad that first year I started in front of 3,000 people up at the Eastman Theater in Rochester. And when I tell you, this dude destroyed 3,000 people. And as a fan of comedy, not only am I watching the show, but I'm also watching the audience. And I was amazed and blown away that he had old, young, Black, Asian, white, Latino, he had everybody. And so I said, yo, I said, there's something to working clean. And I also realized, because Malcolm X said it takes an intelligent man to be able to communicate without using profanity. So I said, you know what, if I can challenge myself to work clean, I still got flavor. And I don't make a big to-do about not using profanity, because sometimes then people are like, oh, it must be corny. But I'm like, you don't realize it until after the fact. And Once I've decided, okay, I'm not going to cuss in life, it'll just take me a little longer to figure out the right words to use to convey the same ideas. Now, no one can say, oh, well, you can't come here and perform, or you have to watch what you say, because I never wanted people to be able to control what I'm doing on stage.
I mean, but that's a big decision. And you did something that's, again, it doesn't sound like, you know, if you just say it flippantly, it doesn't sound groundbreaking, but it is for a young comic at that time, especially to say, you know what, I'm only going to work clean, I'm not going to work blue. It's a big deal. So again, I just have...
Yeah, because I was a father mucking so bad mouth kid at some point, man. I was saying some things. but it's taken me, you know, comedy, being able to work clean has taken me from New York City to Egypt to Saudi Arabia to Hangzhou, China.
You couldn't have gone there, right?
Yeah, and those gigs wouldn't have happened if I was working a little bluer.
I mean, Saudi Arabia, that's gotta pay a lot.
Yeah, listen, right before everything shut down, Godfrey and I were supposed to do a 2-week tour. And I'll say this before I go, right before we left, it was a lot of money. And right before it shut down, there were we were doing Bahrain, Riyadh and Jeddah in Saudi, Kuwait, and Doha, Qatar. So when COVID first started hitting, first they canceled Bahrain. I was like, no, we still have 4 cities left. Then they said, yeah, we're canceling Bahrain and Qatar. I was like, no, it's still 3. Then they canceled Kuwait. I was like, you know, we still have the cities in Saudi. And when they canceled those, dude, for like two months, when the thing hit, I was like, COVID couldn't have waited a month? I'd have been good.
Just one month. As soon as this is over, you're going right back. I'm telling you, they're booking it right back. You know,
I'm looking forward to.
You're gonna double your fee after this thing airs.
After everything ends, I think live entertainment. Once the quarantine's over, everybody's gonna be so anxious to get out and see live entertainers and concerts.
I didn't move to LA to not go to the Hollywood Bowl and go out to the clubs. That's the whole point. Right. Like, otherwise, you spend a lot of money for nothing.
Exactly. What the hell are you living here for? I could live in Texas and in a mansion.
Exactly.
Be here.
Right. Right. You save more money living in Austin or wherever.
Hell yeah.
Austin, Bakersfield, where there's no stand-up comedy.
Yeah, I'm the richest guy in Bakersfield. Anyway, I love how you came back on.
I saw you there and I saw your eyes bright. I was like,
You know what? I didn't know if y'all were hanging. I never know with these things. I'm like, am I supposed to stay on, or should I click off? Are we saying goodbye, or was our goodbye? Are we already goodbye?
We're good? It was the goodbye, but then you were there, and we were like, I wanted to ask that. I was actually really dying to ask that question. So thank God you hung around.
Hey, let's see. This time, I'm going to really disappear.
All right. Okay. We'll see you later. Thank you so much.
Dean Edwards. Thank you. All right, thank you. By the way, if you are listening to the podcast, it's already available on Netflix. Yeah. That means if you're listening tomorrow, it's available right now. Go watch it. They ready. Tiffany Haddish is They Ready. Season 2, Netflix. This thing is hysterical. Cannot recommend it highly enough. Dean Edwards is just a champion.
What an awesome.
Really, champion.
What a nice dude. What a, like,
ooh, I'm so sweating funny. From laughing, dude.
Oh, it's so funny. Well, when he's just like going in between all the different people at the award ceremony. Jesus, he's good.
Chris Tucker, Chris Rock. I mean, come on. Jay-Z.
That was good. It was good. All right.
Okay.
So there's two things we need to talk about right now.
Talk to me.
One is the stereo thing is really blowing up. And I really want people to know that this is a fun place to be. And so I'm going to say this right now. Like, we do talks on there way too much. So if you can't get enough of us, you will have way more than enough of us. You come check us out on stereo. You did a talk yesterday about sequels, right?
Yeah, I do something with Keith Andrew on every Sunday. We either do like yesterday was best adaptations. Next week on Sunday at 2 o'clock, we're going to do best adaptations and some worst. We did best sequels, worst horror sequels. So Keith is always coming up with these amazing things. What did you do today?
I did.
I love it. Top five
comedy animated comedy shows, which is not fair when I work at, with an animation studio. That has like, I could use five from there, but I can't because that's a dick move. And also like, there's also other stuff out there and even the people there have worked on other things. So it's like, I can't pick anything.
You didn't put American Dad on there.
An honorable mention. It probably made my top 12. Mm. There's just so many things.
It's a hard one.
It's a hard one,
but I'll tell you what the thing about stereo is, and all our stuck at homies out there, if you're not already on stereo and following us, please do, because we get what I love about this platform more than anything, and there's a lot of things I love, is how we get to interact with the listeners. Yep. It's this call-in radio concept where you can leave the voice message, we're listening to it on air, and then we get to actually, like this, okay, we get to say something to you when you post stuff, but really, we're not really connecting with you in the way that we love to, and that's a big deal. Plus, how nice is the entire community? It's like there's almost no trolls.
No, there are. Everybody's really nice, and we get to really talk supportive. To some great people. And like, you go in there, and you get to see. We have our followers, and we have you guys, and a lot of you, Nancy. We've seen Nancy in there before.
Yes.
Scott's been there before.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm going to talk with Scott tonight about Streaming Wars.
Oh, that's right. See, so there's always stuff, and we love it. I mean, sincerely, like, love it. Like, my wife is on there all the time. You want to learn more about me and my wife, or do a show called Smits and Giggles, where
I love that title, man. I really love that title, Smits and Giggles. Who came up with that? Was that Stephanie or you?
No, that was me.
That's a good one, man. That's a good one. I'm not gonna lie.
Smits and Giggles.
Smits and Giggles.
It better not have been her. If it was her, that'd be cool too. But I'm pretty sure I came up with Smits and Giggles. But yeah, so that's good. And then the other thing I just wanted to tell you guys real quick, while you're doing that, before you go, get some MeUndies. Go to MeUndies.com/.
You think they're ready?
Yeah, they ready. You know, you ready? MeUndies. Like, tonight, get some soft. Get some soft.
Get
you
soft.
It is February now. There's new stuff up there. They've got these cute little scarves for cats now. Cat scarves.
No.
Yeah, they do have cat scarves now.
Oh, my God. Am I becoming that dude I just got a cat scarf for Sylvie? Is that what's happening?
You're going to have to get a cat scarf for Sylvie. Yeah, they have them. It's I'm looking through. There's so many different kinds of underwear. Okay, so I just want to go through real quick, and then we'll get going because I got a lot to talk to you about.
Go.
I just want to go through just a list of the types of things you can get in pretty much any style you want. Right now, they're focused on their little olive martini print, but you get a modal robe. For men or women, lounge pants, which are my favorite thing in the whole wide world.
Lounge pants are the best. The
women's
best.
Lounge pants. You got the men's boxer brief, the boxer brief with fly, which, no, just get the regular boxer brief, pull them down like a child.
What are you using the fly for?
Don't use the fly. You're going to get your, what are you trying to
do? Wait, is everyone not sitting down when they pee?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Pull them down. Pull them down. And even if you are, I dare you, the next time you go to a urinal, pull them down like 5-year-old style where you're just bare-butted.
You're just bare-butted at the urinal.
Like, bare-butted at the urinal. What are they going to say to you? Nobody's going to mess
with flow.
You know who you don't fuck with? The bare-butt guy. That guy has he may not have class, but he's got
No, he's got a flow like Seabiscuit.
Exactly.
I'm telling you.
So you got the men's, now you got the men's boxer. You also have the men's trunk, which is a shorter version of the brief. So that's not quite as long on the leg, a men's brief, which some people can wear that. I got a little bit too much meat down there. I get a little,
I can't pull off the brief either. Don't kid yourself.
They also have the long boxer brief with fly. So this is, you know, so if you want to wear like a, it's almost like a bicycle pant. They have a bralette. They have two different kinds of bralette, four different kinds of bralette. I don't even know what those are. They're bike bras. Yeah. They have women's cheeky briefs. They got bikini briefs, girls, boy shorts, high waisted cheeky briefs. I don't know what that means, but it feels British. Feel free. Bikini briefs, hipster briefs, thong briefs.
Wait, hipster briefs?
Yeah. It's called a, yeah.
That's,
it's called
for women.
Feel free hipster. Women's boy short, feel free cheeky brief, thong, sock, ankle sock, quarter sock, no-show sock. And then what I was just telling you about, buddy bands, which are like little like scarves for your cat.
Yeah, but they had them for dogs. I didn't know they had them for cats.
So the dogs was a different thing. They had a whole different thing for dogs. But this is for the kitties.
Wow. I mean, this is it, right? You can get the membership, $19.99. There's free shipping. And if you don't like it, it's money-back guarantee. You keep whatever it is. I mean, God, you could buy a cat necklace, a cat scarf, and then be like, my cat didn't like it. And they're like, here's your money.
Yep.
Keep the scarf.
Yeah, because your cat, and also get a new cat, you weirdo. Who doesn't like soft?
He could. What kind of maniac doesn't like soft?
Why would you buy that cat?
Because my point is, anyone who says that is lying. There's no one who hasn't liked MeUndies. They're just cheap and they want their money back. It's so soft.
It's like that old, nobody doesn't like Sara Lee.
Nobody doesn't. And that's what it is with MeUndies. Get soft.
All right. I have a big question for you.
You have to go to MeUndies.com, offer code STUCK.
STUCK.
Yes, 15% off.
I am stuck on MeUndies because MeUndies stuck on me because of the blood or what? I don't know.
Go soft. All right. What do we got?
All right. So
and thank you for letting us pay the bills
the other day. I'm just going to play while we talk. And it's going to sit behind us. Okay. And the reason I want to talk about this is because I'm really curious what you think. So I was watching a big thing on how Marvel movies are made. All right. I'm not going to put the sound in here. We're just going to kind of talk about it as we look at this, as we look at the preview. Mm-hmm. But so this is all previs. This is all pre-visualization of different Marvel movies. And you can kind of see the beginning and the final. And I think this is interesting. We do this a lot with websites and stuff when I was in marketing and we were doing little videos for certain type of like, hey, we need to show what this toaster is going to look like. And we wanted to show, like, give them some ideas of what to do. And it seems pretty no brainer. It's like the next generation of storyboards to me. Like, you're storyboarding this whole show. First of all, and then there's this guy
Chris I can't stand, Chris Edwards.
You know why you don't like Chris Edwards and you don't know why? Cause him and Ted Cruz have the same hairstyles on their face and you can't trust anybody who also dresses like Ted Cruz.
He's so pretentious. Go on. Yep.
Yeah, Ted Cruz. Exactly.
The scarf.
But so with all this previs, so, you know, it used to be they do a few scenes, block out a bit, some of the action scenes, but they're getting to the point now in Disney where they
Marvel
and Marvel in general, specifically Marvel, but it's happening with everything. I can see this being every part of every show that they do now where they're basically prevising 100% of the movie. So before the director shoots a single thing, every single shot has been prevised in the similar way. Right. And I don't know if that's a bad thing, but my question is for you, being a writer and a director and being in Hollywood, what does that do to the director? Because it feels like you could hypothetically previs something like Feige or say whoever's running it, the Russos or whoever's in charge could previs the whole thing and then hire whoever. I'm just curious what this does to the director as opposed to the producer.
It neuters him.
It does.
Yeah, I mean, in my humble opinion, I mean, listen, previs is great for an action sequence, for really knowing, like, when you want to save money, you could save millions of dollars prevising your action sequence, absolutely. But what they're doing now and what this guy, Chris Edwards, who really, he just comes off as such a pompous dude, and he's like, well, let's directors just be freed up, you know, to, like, get the best performances and give comments, which is what they really do anyway. And it's like, no, it's not what they do. They make shot lists. And the problem is, you know, they're working with performances, but they're also telling a story through the camera. That's a narrative hand that's being told. And when you have guys like these previs guys who now think they're writers and directors and this is how it's going to be, I believe they're shooting the whole movie before it's shot. And if they're doing that, because these things take a while. It's not like they do them overnight, right, Jace?
No, they take a long time. This isn't short. This could take months, if not years.
Yeah, that means just by the sheer nature of how long it takes that they have to start doing this before they even hire a director.
Right.
And that's where you are losing. And I feel like that's why a lot of this stuff, look, I know I'm in the minority, I'm Mandalorian, but I feel like it's why a lot of this stuff has no heart, you know, or very little heart, because you are not, listen, I don't think we're getting to a place where you're going to see, the Descendants pre-vis, you know what I mean? Like, but what we are getting to a place of is that if this keeps happening, we might not get Descendants anymore. You know, Quentin is not pre-vising, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. But what they are saying is like, oh, yeah, well, we have writers on staff here. And, now they're on the set. It's like, oh, they're on the set telling the directors what to do, and Marvel's telling them what to write based on this previous stuff. Look, here's a good example of what we're watching is the Spider-Man 3 movement. And here's a great reason to use previs other than, saving money on these action sequences is like with Spider-Man, they were very worried about the nausea of the audience. So they can test it with previs and see what the audience can stand. That's great. So a director can walk in and they go, look, we already tested this. So here are the parameters for shooting this because otherwise your audience is going to vomit.
Right.
And you don't want that. Okay, that's where, and to me, it should be...
When they're doing a coffee shop scene and everybody's just sitting in a coffee shop.
Right. And they're pre-vising, they're pre-vising these things. And I find that, as we say in Yiddish, a shanda. Mm-hmm. This is pulling the gut and heart out of art.
Right.
And just because it's Marvel, it doesn't mean there can't be art. You have some of the best actors in the world doing Marvel movies. You should be getting...
And some of the best directors. I mean, yes. and when the right director hits it, like Taika...
Or James Gunn.
A little bit of his own flavor of there and James Gunn. But, I bet you that this... I have a feeling this DC movie that James Gunn making is going to be a lot freer feeling for him than this. Because I'm sure a lot of this, because it's one of the things, like you said, it takes out the heart. What it adds to it all is uniformity. Like you can tell when a Marvel movie is being played. It looks all the same because it's basically the director doesn't have as much say as the people who are trying to make it all look exactly like it used to look.
Yeah, these tech dudes, they want to act like they're artists, but they're not. And I'm not saying what they do isn't art. Okay, so let me be clear. They are not storytellers.
Right.
No matter how much they want to convince the world that they are, they are not. And there's something also that's magical that happens on a set, and it's called a happy accident. And it's not planned. And the second you walk
in... real quick, if you ever have a happy accident on set, you don't have to return those MeUndies. You just tell them they didn't work, you get another pair free.
Set you right up for it, didn't I? Walked right into it. But yeah, look at this. 7,300 previs shots just to do Avengers, right? And let me say this. They previs that whole movie, and it still cost $365 million. So what did they save? I'll tell you what they saved. They saved all the heart.
Yep.
Because, except for them disappearing at the end, I didn't get moved by that movie.
Right.
But I was moved by Iron Man when Favreau did it. And I guarantee you, if anything, only action sequences were previs than that.
Right. Because there has to be some comfort in the ability to make these things look the way they need to look or feel the way they need to feel based on the actors. I mean, you're absolutely right. I think I could see a reason to previs this movie only because of the sheer number of talent that you have to have. And you don't want to necessarily bring a bunch of like super famous people for their 5 minute set and not have a clear idea of where you're going with it, but not in this way. This feels just like you said, like I worry about it because then
empty
then what's the point of bringing these awesome directors on? Like what do you need a James Gunn for? What do you need Ryan Coogler
Russo
for?
Brothers.
Yeah. Coogler is an amazing, like I just watched Rocky again and I just watched Creed again. And aside from Warrior, like this one was just a pure at the end, like joy cry.
Loved.
Oh my God, I was bawling. He did such a good job in that scene in the middle where he's where he did the one shot fight, the three round fight. Beautiful, beautifully fucking shot.
Gorgeous.
And then they put him on Black Panther, which did well. But when you really look at it and you see what's going on, like I bet you Coogler could have made that better.
Of course he could. Compare Fruitvale Station and Creed to Wakanda. It doesn't. Wakanda has not the heart. Look, I'm thrilled it got made. I was not a fan of Black Panther. I did not like it. That being said, I believe if you let this guy do what he does best, they're like, one of the reasons, you know, and I see it as a sales pitch. Now, here, they're showing Nocturnal Animals, right? And that's a Tom Ford movie. Now, I can understand why a guy like Tom Ford, who's a designer, one of the best in the world, wants to previs certain shots of this because as an artist, he probably wants things to look like a photo, you know, and he wants to make sure he's going to get that exact effect. So I could see that, but he didn't previs that whole movie. And had they let a guy like Ryan, who's a genius, not previs all of this, I bet you everything in Black Panther would have more heart. I really do. It would have more emotional gravitas. And one of the sales pitch things that they're doing here, which I really found offensive, is, you know, the whole thing. But they're saying like, oh, well, it allows, you know, directors who aren't as familiar with action sequences come in and give their flair to it. The fact is, you can still do that without the pre-vising. You know, right. I mean, these people, if you bring them on, these directors like who didn't have the action experience, you're just surrounding them with the best people anyway, who are going to walk them through it. It's not like, let the artists do their job and we'll let you do yours. And that's, I feel like there's a disconnect and it's going to affect a lot of content in the future and not in a good way.
Right. And it also it doesn't feel like it can help these directors either. I mean, John Watts, all right. John Watts directed Spider-Man Far From Home, both Spider-Man movies and the new one he's going to be doing. And he's done a couple other little things, but in general, Cop Car was his first real breakout movie. And then, and Clown, which nobody saw Clown.
Nobody
saw Clown. But like he's a young, he's 39, but for all intents and purposes, he's a young director, right?
Oh yeah, for sure.
And he probably, you know, his budget on Cop Car other than Bacon's salary was probably 10 million, 15 million on that movie. Yeah. Maybe.
I think you're being generous.
Yeah.
But yeah,
and,
go on.
So then, but his very next movie after Cop Car is a $200 million Spider-Man movie. What you're really doing, Disney, is what you're telling me is you want somebody that knows how the camera works and might have a little bit of a vision, you know, on how to deal with kids or people. But in general, you just want somebody that's not gonna, you want company men. You're building up a company, a stable.
I'm so
company.
Grateful.
Yeah.
But I think also what hit me as you were talking, sparked something, which is this. I think what Sony and Disney and Marvel are doing is saying, oh, we'll do have the whole movie done, but then we'll hire someone who, you know, has heart.
Right.
So we can place their name on it, but we're going to tell them everything to do. And we're going to fool you into thinking, well, because so-and-so did it, it's going to be a good movie now. So I'm excited. And it's not. I mean, James Gunn is the exception. I feel like with Guardians, he did something tremendous. But I also would wonder how much of the first Guardians was previst.
Yep. Well, also I'm going to wonder how much of it, because the second one, I know you could tell that the where it lost the thread and where it wasn't James Gunn anymore.
Yes, Jason, good point.
And I think for the most part, it's still like, you know, you look at what James Gunn did before this, you know, even Slither was fucking weird compared to this stuff. So they can't rein him in. That's why I'm really curious to see the DC movie, because it's all practical. It looks like an old 70s movie, Suicide Squad.
Yep.
That I think is going to be full gun, right? That's going to be weird.
He's the full gun?
He's going to get a loaded gun, right? That's the
Leslie Nielsen.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, did you see that they're trying to remake that? We'll get into that later. Liam Neeson.
Are they going
to
pre-visit?
Liam Neeson.
I'll tell you what could be pre-vised. Every Zack Snyder film. You don't even need him.
No, yeah.
You just pre-visit and put his name on it.
You could pretty much be just as empty. Just put it out, because that's about what it looks like when it's done, half ready.
Yeah.
Under freeze frame bullshit. Yeah. Well, that's almost out. Oh, so
yeah, I know. It's February 15th or 16th, he said. I remember, because it's like a dreading day.
Oh, that's so funny.
It's not going to be good. We're almost out of time, right? Do we have any news other than the previous stuff? Which I just really, thanks for bringing that up.
Stuff. There's not a ton of stuff going on right now. There is one sad thing. Screech Samuel, Dustin Diamond, he passed away today, stage 4 cancer.
What?
Yeah, he'd been hospitalized for a while, but Dustin Diamond passed away today.
Oh, rest his soul. What a rocky road, man.
Yeah, for real.
Damn, that guy. Well, you know, hey, you can't say he didn't live life hard.
Yeah, he lived it hard. Right? Definitely did.
He got a lot out of it. Nothing else. Go on.
Yeah. No, I mean, I feel bad. I mean, he had his things. People, you know, it's nice that everybody said nice things about him when he left. I know that they weren't necessarily this feeling the same way after the book, but you can tell that guy was troubled. And at least he did it his way.
I guess so. And that's what Servant's doing too, which has completely jumped the shark.
We're going to dig into that. Yeah, so, so come Wednesday, we're going to do a couple things. We get to talk about your favorite show again, Dickinson.
Oh yeah, I know. I cannot wait about this. We have the costume designer on, correct?
Yeah. So we're going to talk a little Dickinson. We're going to talk a little Servant, but we're going to wait until everybody leaves so we can talk about it. and we're going to have a lot of fun. And then and then we got some stereo stuff going. I'm trying to pick as many fights as I can on there. I said a lot of bold things in the last couple of days just to see if I could get in trouble.
Give me one.
Calsper had to back away from him. He's like, listen, man.
What'd you say? Give me one.
Oh, I don't remember. I was talking about a show being dumb, like a show being super bad and just like, yeah. Like when I get mad and I talk about Hamilton mean, I did that with like four cartoons. I was like, come on, bring it, nerds. Bring it, nerds.
Sometimes you just do it for the reaction.
I talk shit about Star Wars. What I did. I said
that's weird because you love Star Wars.
Oh yeah, because I was talking about the Mandalorian being the first season being shit.
Oh, you know how I feel. You know how I feel.
On there, you can fight with me there. One last thing. I don't want to end it on something sad. I just want to end it because I think it's very funny in its own way. Is that Will Forte feels really bad about the jokes that he did on Last Man on Earth, because it was all based around a pandemic. That's how the world ended. And mm-hmm. he feels really bad now that he wrote all those jokes that actually came to be.
He's supposed to know.
I know, but he still feels guilty.
Prophetic, that's all.
Yeah, just prophetic.
Yeah, he's got to feel bad for it. That must be, Will Forte must be a nice guy.
He's a very nice guy. I met him at Largo a couple times when he did some stuff with the Sklars. He must be so nice. The nicest.
And you know what? By the way, to all our Stuck at Homies, before we go, you know, on Fridays, we now only do our show Stuck at Home on stereo. So that is another reason, because it's exclusive now, just on stereo on Fridays. Am I correct in saying that, Jason?
Stereo, until I can figure out how to make it work on stream on both of them. It is going to be just there, but yes.
Okay, so then until Wednesday, when we get to have some more Dickinson, I say to all of you.
Hey, Cliff. What? You want some more dick?
I heard it. Jason, I heard it. So on that note.
A big happy bowl of dick.
Big bowl of dick. Stay safe. Stay sane. Stay strong, Jason Smith.
Cliff Dorfman, I love you. Talk to you later, everybody.